Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
It is going well, Chris. It's actually kind of weird today. It is 70 degrees Fahrenheit outside near the tail end of October.
Okay, so...
And half of work called off today.
Okay, so for us Canadians, what does that translate into Celsius? Is that cold for you?
Oh, that's unseasonably warm.
Oh, okay.
For this time of year. All right, that would be 21 Celsius.
Oh, I wish. We're like at like minus 15, I want to say right now.
Oh, geez.
Celsius? Yeah, it's cold here. Like, it was trying to snow earlier today. Well, it did snow, but when I say try, I mean it didn't actually stick to the ground. Like, it melted.
Yeah.
But there was ice. There was, like, I know we were driving back from the city, and the one section was quite slick. It really was, and I actually slowed down, but... No, I wish it was 21 degrees. Oh, man. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, no, we had people leave for lunch and then call and say, I'm not coming back today.
That would be nice. yeah, especially, yeah, like we're approaching the end of October. And, yeah, that would be fantastic. So, Kevin, as I said, we're approaching the end of October. Are you guys getting all ready for Halloween? Or how do you think Halloween's going to turn out this year? Because we are still... in the COVID 2020 Bermuda Triangle thing that's happening here. Like, Halloween's going to work out for you guys?
I think it's going to be all right. I think that we can, for where we are, I think mm-hmm. we'll be all right with it. We have it set up. Like, New York's one of the few states that's doing very well right now for all of that.
Okay.
So, I think overall, considering what, you know, Halloween is going to be, usually just walk up, you know, get something, say thank you, and keep mm-hmm. going. I
yep.
think we'll be able to do that, no problem. But I'm not going to, like, you know, a firehouse having a trunk-or-treat thing or whatever, you know, a
yeah.
party. You know, no bobbing for apples, anything like that this year.
Yeah.
I think I just want to walk around, go up to a couple houses, and that be it.
Yeah. The last few years, we haven't had as many trick-or-treaters come into our house. Because, like, in my town, they have an event they call the Pumpkin Walk, where in years past, what they did was they would go to a golf course, and they would basically set up, like, this walking path for kids. And each hole would have, like, a different station where a different business would hand out candies or like, coloring books or that sort of thing, right? Like, so in our town, that got really big. So it seemed like the trick-or-treating kind of diminished a little bit. But now with COVID and all that, like, that's not going to happen this year. So I don't know if that's going to translate to more people going out trick-or-treating or... is it going to, you know, are more parents going to be cautious and not send their kids out? So I don't know. Like,
what... I mean, honestly, I think it's the best holiday to still go forward with this year because you're wearing a mask anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, earlier temperature discussion aside, usually it's colder and you're, you know, even the adults are bundled up to mm-hmm. go and have, you know, American Thanksgiving dinner with 20, 30 family members who you haven't seen all year long, who have been to their jobs or their schools or their whatever, coming into contact with who knows who.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to see an explosion. Mm-hmm. I think Halloween makes more sense this year than any other, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. Like, for me, I'm working anyway, so I won't be home. And I mean, my youngest is 14, but apparently she is still going to go out and trick or treat. But for me, you know, the biggest thrill is handing the kids out to the kids. Like I would always be the parent that stayed home, right, and handed out the treats and kept track of how many kids came to our house and stuff. So I miss that. It's very, very unfortunate. And unfortunately, the way the time aligns, we fall back as well that night, Halloween night.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, and I'm working night shift, so that means my 12-hour shift is now a 13-hour shift. And I don't know what it is, but it seems like that extra hour just makes this shift seem like twice as long. Like, I don't know what it is. It's just an hour. But, you know, when you actually, you know, when you're working and you actually have to set the clock back an hour, it's rough. I don't know. Not looking forward to it. And I'm going to miss seeing the kids. You know, like I said, I loved handing out candy. I loved all that. Something I've been doing the last few years is, for those who don't know, I don't think I've talked about this on the podcast. So I imagine a lot of people don't know, except for my close friends and family. But I collect Hot Wheel cars. In particular, I collect Mustangs. Because I don't know, I've always loved Ford Mustangs, and so I don't know. It started when my son was younger, and he would, because he was really into Hot Wheels and stuff, and it, you know, so I started, you know, I started buying Mustangs, right, and kind of keeping them for myself, and it grew into this collection that I have now. So what I do is throughout the year, you know, like when I'm at Walmart or, you know, a store where that sells Hot Wheels, and I'm looking for Mustangs, I can't remember every one I have. So sometimes I buy, like, a double. So I don't want to keep it as in my collection, right? So what I do is I set it to the side. And then come Halloween, what I do is I hand those out to little boys. Or little girls, if the girl's into Hot Wheels. So I started saving those for that reason. So at Halloween, I hand out Hot Wheel Mustangs to usually little boys. Because what I do for the girls is I go out and I buy, you know, like My Little Ponies or something. Like just something little. Kind of like a Hot Wheel, but like a girl version. And then I hand those out as well. So... You know, and usually what I do is I save those for like the little guys or little girls that are out by themselves. You know, like they're not with a big group. You know, and depending, like sometimes you could just tell, you know, like maybe they don't have much, you know, and just seeing those reactions, you know, like I remember this one little boy, I gave him a Hot Wheel and man, you know, he just lit right up. He was so happy. And it's only, you know, $2 or $1.50 Hot Wheel, you know, like it's nothing. But I mean, it's awesome to see the reactions on their faces. So yeah, today when we were in the city, like I have, I don't know, about 8 Hot Wheels lined up, like, which doesn't sound like much, but last year we only, I think had like 21 trick-or-treaters. So,
oh,
It's not very much. But I have about 8 doubles, so I went out and I bought like My Little Pony miniatures, I think is what they are. And then I bought these little dolls that are like mermaids or fairies or whatever, like girl toys. And so I won't be handing those out, but we'll be handing those out, as well as like we hand out chocolate bars and suckers and all that kind of stuff too. You know, it sucks. I got to work. I'm going to miss it. I love Halloween for that reason. I'm not a big horror movie guy. I'm not a big, you know, dressing up. Like, I've never been, like, even going to, you know, comic cons and stuff. Like, I love seeing people's cosplays. I love getting my pictures taken with, you know, someone in a really cool cosplay. But myself, that just doesn't interest me. So I'm not into dressing up or anything, right? But the part that I love the most about Halloween is seeing the little kids come into the door, you know, saying trick or treat. That's my favorite part. And unfortunately, this year I got to miss it.
Yeah, there's just something still pure and innocent and fun for seeing kids in costumes that they, you know, that they picked out, that they wanted a character, an idea, or whatever, and just walking around. And like the Halloweens that rained last year, it rained all Halloween long. Ours was not a fun Halloween.
Okay.
But the years where everything's nice and crisp and, you know, has that beautiful fall feeling to it, you're like, oh, this is what I miss about being a kid. And I'm glad my kid can experience it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, unfortunately, yeah, like this year with the COVID, it sucks. Because like for me, when I was a kid, one of the things I loved was going to the houses where you got like homemade stuff. Like I grew up in a smaller community. So like, for example, like my grandma, she would make popcorn every year and she would give you like in a paper bag popcorn. Right. And it was the best popcorn. I loved it. It was fantastic. Another lady who's a friend of my mom and my grandma, she makes like those caramel popcorn balls. Those were awesome. I loved those too. And, you know, some people would make candied apples and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I guess now with like COVID and all that, it's got to be packaged. Like, it can't be any homemade stuff, unfortunately. Unless you know the person quite well, I'm sure, you know, but to hand out homemade stuff, I'm sure a lot of parents ain't gonna go for that this year.
Yeah. There's already concern around Halloween time for that stuff, but this year I have too much I've had to deal with in 2020, and I'm not gonna add that to it.
Yes, agreed. And yeah, like we are definitely in a second wave right now. Like I know just in my community, like we've had a number of COVID-19 cases, and we haven't had one since like April. So like it's very unfortunate. And yeah, I think this is going to go down as one of the worst years in history, without a doubt.
Oh, probably. It's already close to it now, you know.
Yeah. But anyway, so let's get on to our main topic this evening. And the topic is thank you for being a friend. I got this topic idea from watching The Golden Girls, because in Canada, The Golden Girls weren't on any streaming service, you know, and it was very unfortunate. And I'm a Golden Girls fan. Like I grew up watching The Golden Girls. You know, I grew up watching them basically 5 days a week. You know, like I remember they were on CBC. I want to say like 5:30 every evening, and we'd watch it. And I mean, I'm old enough. I remember watching like new episodes of The Golden Girls as they came out. And anyway, they just recently got added to Amazon Prime in Canada. I don't know about the United States. I think they were on Hulu or something in the States, I believe.
Yeah, because they aired on NBC in the States. So Hulu, oh, okay. It's most likely for that. Not a given, but most likely.
Okay. But yeah, my wife and I, like, we've been, every once in a while we'll binge, you know, an afternoon of Golden Girls, and, you know, I think we're about halfway through season two right now. But yeah, one of my favorite sitcoms of all time. So much so, I don't know if you saw this, Kevin, but today I bought a Golden Girls wallet.
I did see it.
Yeah, that's how big of a fan I am. I saw that wallet and I was like, because like I bought this Star Wars wallet that I currently use. I want to say like 3 or 4 years ago now. It's looking quite faded actually, because I seen a picture, like it popped up on one of my memories on Facebook, like one of the pictures I took of it when I first bought it, and I was like, wow, it's really looking faded now. And I know eventually, like every, you know, like wallets don't last forever. I know one day, because I like the zipper type of wallet, just because like I put my lottery tickets in it and that sort of thing. So I know eventually, you know, I'm going to have to replace this wallet. And then when I seen that Golden Girls wallet, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to buy that and I'm going to set it to the side, because I know one day my zipper's going to go in my wallet or something's going to happen. My wallet will get stolen again. I don't know. And then I'll be like, damn it, I should have bought that Golden Girls wallet when I had the chance. Now I got to buy something else. So anyway, that's what I did. That was my train of thought today as I was justifying to myself this Golden Girls wallet. And then my wife saw, because I posted it on social media that I bought this Golden Girls wallet. She's seen it. And so I went out and I had to buy her a Golden Girls wallet as well, but not the same one. They yeah, had,
that'd be confusing.
Yeah, that'd be weird. But they had one that was more, I want to say, not to sound sexist, but it was more girly. You know, and so I bought her that one. And now she's happy. So, because we're, like I said, we're both big Golden Girl fans. But anyway, listening, you know, because I can't skip the theme song. Like, they give you that option of skipping the theme song when you watch it on Amazon Prime. I never do that. I never skip that intro because I love that theme song. I love Thank You for Being a Friend. It's so iconic. But it got me thinking for an episode topic. The best friend and friendships in pop culture. So we're going to talk about that. You know, we're talking about, you know, people that are good friends, you know, good friendships, so on and so forth. And I had a few examples. So the first one I'll throw out there from Star Trek Deep Space Nine is Chief O'Brien and Dr. Bashir. There's a lot of different friendships and so on in Star Trek lore. But that by far is my favorite because they started out as not friends. Like Chief O'Brien really didn't like Dr. Bashir in the beginning. He really was annoyed with him. But as is the case in life, you know, the more time they spent together, you know, the more danger that they got in together, you know, a friendship developed, a genuine friendship. And I loved it as the series progressed, and you would see them, you know, building models of, you know, Davy Crockett and the big battle there. Why am I drawing a blank? The big battle.
Alamo?
Yeah, the Alamo. Yes, the Alamo. You know, they did a model of that on Deep Space Nine. You know, they would go on the holosuite, they would play, you know, where Dr. Bashir was a spy, you know, they also did World War II, you know, flying aces. You know, they just had a great friendship, and I really appreciated that. And in my opinion, it's my favorite friendship in Star Trek. So, Kevin, what are your thoughts on that, and do you have any that you want to throw out there?
Oh, I mean, I've been thinking about it since you originally posted the topic. I was like, geez, there's so many directions you could go with it. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing is, because I was thinking about it, and in a lot of TV shows and even some movies too, what drives me nuts is the people always want to put in conflict for it, for best friends. Oh,
yep.
not the way you're talking about. Not in the, we couldn't stand each other and we became best friends. That's good. But it's like, oh, and then they're going to fight over a woman.
Yeah.
Oh, and then they're going to do that. I'm like, can't they just be best friends?
Yep.
Like, I have some best friends I've had since high school. We've never fought over a woman. You know, we've never, like, come to blows. Like, you know, anything like that. And I know you got to do a dramatic TV show, but why not just have people get along for a little bit, too? So, one of the ones that I have enjoyed all of my life, and I've seen everything they've been in, and I can't think of a time where they really, like, split up and weren't friends anymore, and that was that you can argue with your friends, you can have disagreements, but at the end of the day, you're still there for each other, and I'm a huge fan of them. So my first pick I'm going to throw out there, Jay and Silent Bob.
Nice.
I was watching a clip today. I don't even know. You ever see the movie Fanboys?
I did, yep.
I forgot they were in there as Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes, not as Jay and Silent Bob. You know, but I forgot mm-hmm. they were in there. But just the blurred line between what's fantasy and reality for them, and just, you know, they're up as much goofy hijinks, ridiculousness in real life as they are in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get along at first. If you ever listen to any of Kevin Smith's longer interviews,
yep,
they've gone through a lot together with Jason Mewes' drug addiction, and he's still, you know, you got new generation that has a connection. You got whole families that are friends. I'm like, that's awesome. That, like, I enjoy that one of my best friends has a wife and kids, and we can all get along with mm-hmm. my wife and kids too.
Yep.
Like, that's great. And, you know, think back to high school and young 20s, neither of us were thinking ahead for something like that. You know, that eventually we'd have whole families that could get along.
Yeah.
But I like seeing best friends that continue to be best friends too.
Yeah. No, that's an excellent choice. I love Jay and Silent Bob, and I love Jason Mewes and Kevin Smith. Yeah, fantastic. You know, they're probably my favorite duo. Like if you're gonna, you know, throw them in there with, like, say, Bill and Ted, Wayne and Garth, you know, they're probably my favorite duo, Jay and Silent Bob.
I mean, I would even go further back. They're absolutely my favorite. Laurel and Hardy never clicked with me. Nothing but respect, but never clicked.
Yep.
Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein is one of my favorite movies of all time. I love that movie.
Yep.
But I'm not. It's Halloween time, you know, or close to it as we record this. At some point, I'll watch Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein because that's on my Halloween list.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been craving time for the last couple weeks. I'm like, I haven't watched Mallrats in years, and it's the 25th anniversary of it.
Yes.
Like, I got to find time to sit down and watch that.
Yep.
And if I watch that, then I'm probably going to want to watch some of the other ones too.
Yep. Yeah, that's one I got to track down on. Like, I don't know if maybe it's on one of my streaming services. I got to look into that first. Because before I buy anything, I gotta, you know, make sure it's on a stream service. Like, I got a couple copies of Clerks. I used to have Mallrats on VHS back in the day, but I don't have VHS anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm hoping it's on a streaming service somewhere. If not, I'm gonna have to order the DVD or something. Because yeah, it's with it being the 25th anniversary. Yeah, that's a stroll down memory lane. And yeah, and even to this day, they still have that chemistry that works. Like, Jan Silent Bob, the new one.
Reboot, yep.
Reboot, fun. Yes.
So much fun.
Yeah, I love that movie, and I didn't realize I would love it as much as I did. But yeah, excellent choice. That's a good one. All right, so probably my next one that I appreciate. Like, I got some honorable mentions, but I want to throw some ones out there that I really appreciate. And this is for the comic book fans. Like, I'm a fan of the Incredible Hulk. as people know, I'm one of the admins of the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk group on Facebook. And, the Hulk is just one of my favorite comic book characters of all time. In particular, Peter David's run on the Incredible Hulk, his 12-year run. And one of the, lasting friendships to come from, the Incredible Hulk, and in particular that series, is Rick Jones and the Hulk. For those who don't know, Rick Jones he's kind of the reason why Bruce Banner became the Hulk, because he worked, or I don't know, he was, I can't remember exactly, he was at the Gamma base, and someone dared him to drive out on the testing site where they were going to test the Gamma bomb, and so he did. He drove out there, and he's playing his harmonica, and Bruce Banner has to go out there and save him, and he throws him into the fallout trench just as the bomb goes off. So Bruce Banner, Rick is safe from all this radiation and gamma blasts, but Bruce Banner takes it, and he thus becomes the Hulk. And in the early issues, Rick Jones was there. Like, he was kind of helping Bruce Banner slash the Hulk out in the first little bit. He eventually became friends with the Avengers. He became... he was trained by Captain America to basically be a sidekick. He was a sidekick for Captain Marvel for a while. He was Captain Marvel for a while. But his friendship with the Hulk always comes back, right? Like, he's like, they always, they've been the best of friends for years and years. And then it was really tragic with, Peter David's Future Imperfect storyline, where, the future version of Rick Jones, who's super old at this point, like he's like 100 years old, and the future version of the Hulk, which is now the Maestro, this evil, despot, he's ruling over the ruins of what was New York City, and Rick Jones is basically leading a group of resistance fighters against him. To see these good friends become enemies, it was very tragic and very sad to see. But, Rick Jones being, even though he was, losing his mind or whatever, was the downfall of the Maestro. And, their friendship, though, was epic. It was fantastic. And especially, like I said, in the Peter David run, Rick Jones, for many years of Peter David's run, was one of the main supporting characters in that book. And, I really appreciated their friendship. But, all right, so Kevin, next on your list, sir.
Well, I was just going to add, I think Rick Jones is just still not given credit in the comics. There's no good reason Rick Jones has not been in MCU yet as a uniting character.
Mm-hmm.
That he could be, much like on the Netflix Marvel Defender series, you had Rosario Dawson.
Yep.
Kind of as the connecting person between all the shows. Rick Jones would be so easy to work in there as a connecting figure to all these different stories and all. It'd be so easy. Years and years ago, I wrote an article on a website for the top 10 important figures, Marvel figures that don't have toys yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I put Rick Jones number one.
Yep.
I was like, would that be boring looking toy? It's just like a teenager and, jean jacket and denim. Yeah. Yeah. It's a boring looking figure, but you know what? That's an important figure. That's someone that deserves a figure.
Well, and he's grown, like, in the Marvel Universe as well. Like, he went from being, a teenager to being, kind of a rock star within the Marvel Universe. He had longer hair, and, and he was a rocker and stuff. Peter David wrote him as a TV daytime talk show host. Or, no, late night talk show host as well. And he got married in the issues of The Incredible Hulk. I think it was 418 he got married. He's had some really good arcs, and And I should point out, like, he was, you know, the Bruce Banner Hulk, you know, Professor Hulk, whatever you want to call him, he was the best man at Rick Jones' wedding.
Yeah, to Marlo, right?
To Marlo, yeah. And I think he was best man to Bruce, I think, when he married Betty.
I think so.
If I remember correctly, so. But anyway, go ahead, Kevin.
All right, well, recently I was reading a collection of Avengers stories, and it is a variety. It's like 30 years of Avengers stories. And it's just, anytime they did like a membership drive. So mm-hmm. the very first issue's in there, issue 16, when most of the team leaves and Hawkeye, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch come on the team. And then various ones throughout the years, the one with, that kind of cover of Henry Gyrick slamming his fist down on the table and saying there's too many Avengers and you have, you know, the crowd of everyone there. So I read a story in there. I'm like, oh, I heard about this, but I wasn't reading it when this was a thing. And then I went and read more. I'm like, this is one of the best written friendships in comics I've ever seen. And I'm putting it up there as Marvel's version of Blue Beetle and Booster Gold for a we can pick on each other and be awful to each other, but we are there for each other friendships. Beast and Wonder Man.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, can I guess before you... Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's exactly what I was going to predict. Yep.
I never read it before. It's so good. It's such a good friendship. You tie in Avengers and X-Men and different corners of Marvel, and they goof around. They help each other out. The banter's fantastic, but they can step up anytime. Oh my gosh, it was so good. The more and more I read, I was like, why did this like what kills me is you can see eras in comics, especially the older we get. And then like one of the interesting things when Bendis came on for as like an architect of Marvel is him bringing 70s characters back that he loved, that he grew up with.
Yep.
So then you get like Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Spider-Woman being put back up to a place of prominence that they didn't have in the 70s. Me reading comics in the 80s and 90s, I didn't see those three characters ever, because they were just on the shelf. Mm-hmm. So this Beast and Wonder Man friendship was on the shelf for the decade probably I was reading Avengers comics. Every once in a while, like, oh, hey, I haven't seen you in a while either, and that's it. But to actually read them, I'm like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. I would buy a brand new Marvel series for what, $4 or $5 an issue right now, that's Beast and Wonder Man hangout adventures. Like, it was just so good. What a missing thing.
Yeah, I would love them to do something like that, like and get the right writer involved, you know, like Peter David or you know, Kurt Busiek, someone like that, that could really speak to those characters.
Yeah, someone that really loves it. Now, don't just throw someone out there to throw a body on there. Throw someone out there that's like, I love this, and I would love a crack at it, too.
Yep. Excellent. All right, so for next on my list, I'm going with Fred and Barney from the Flintstones.
Really?
Was that on your list as well?
No, I was going back and forth in certain cartoon ones.
Okay. Yeah, no, I just love Fred and Barney. You know,
I wasn't sure if you were going to or not.
Yeah, I love the Flintstones. Again, one of my favorite sitcoms. But yeah, just their friendship, you know, poor Barney's always, you know, taking the brunt of Fred's mishaps. You know, and he's always, you know, the good friend. He's always, you know, up for, you know, being dragged along and having to, you know, participate in whatever Fred's got, you know, conjuring up. Yeah, I just love Fred and Barney. You know, and I'm talking the '60s, the original Flintstones run. Even after that, like, you know, like when they did that Jetsons Meet the Flintstones movie, I think most of the same voice actors were involved in that one too, but. You know, like they just have a great friendship. And yeah, that's basically all I got to say. Fred and Barney, they're on my list. Kevin, next on your list, sir.
And for Fred and Barney, I just gotta say, one of the things I liked is, even because most time if it's an episode focusing on them,
mm-hmm.
Fred is something kind of dumb, upsets Barney. Mm-hmm. You know, they make up by the end of it. But there's a big difference between I did something dumb because I was excited about the situation and I got carried away with it, and that's forgivable, versus I did something dumb because I'm an a-hole and I didn't care about you or your opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fine line in sitcoms, but you go too far in one direction, you're like, I don't like this character. They're just rude and mean, and why am I supporting what they do? Why am I watching the show? You know, versus like, okay, I've done that too. I've seen the new pretty shiny thing and gotten so excited about it, I kind of forgot my place for a moment, and I'm sorry, and everyone has a laugh. That's different. I'm going to go with one. It's a live-action sitcom, but they're kind of cartoonish as well there with their hijinks. And one of the best friendships I've ever seen on TV, Turk and JT from Scrubs.
Hmm. Excellent.
My wife had most of the seasons, if not all of it, and I'd never seen a bit of it. So when we first started dating and living together and everything, she's like, you have to watch this. You'll get into it. And it took a couple episodes. I was like, oh, this is actually really good. And this is far enough back. We were watching the seasons on the Netflix disc, so we had to wait for the next, you know, ones to come in the mail and burning through it that way. But oh my gosh, some of those episodes are just like, we still quote things in this house because it's just so funny, so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, absolute best friends, supportive of each other no matter what. And you look at the show on paper and you're like, there's no way that these actors, that this idea, that this concept, that any of this will work. And it's brilliant.
Excellent. No, I had never actually watched Scrubs either. Like, I know of it, but my wife, she watched it back in the day. But yeah, I never got into watching Scrubs. But yeah, I know enough of them that I definitely appreciate your choice there.
I mean, they did a last season that was kind of tacked on at the end. I think they may have even switched networks. That's awful. I watched it just to be a completist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's too bad when they do stuff like that. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
But, all right. Well, I'm going to go with trifecta here. And that is Kirk, Spock, and McCoy from the original Star Trek. I'm talking the original Star Trek. I'm not talking the Jar Jar Abrams Star Trek. I'm talking the original series. William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, and DeForest Kelly. You know, I just loved the way that they were written. You know, like the camaraderie between them, that, you know, Spock represents logic and McCoy represents emotion, and Kirk, you know, they're almost like duels, you know, like the cartoons, like when you would see like the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other shoulder. That's kind of what they are for Kirk. You know, like McCoy, you know, like when they're in a situation, McCoy will present, you know, the emotional aspect of it. Spock will present the rationalized, logical aspect of what's going on. And Kirk's got to be somewhere in the middle. Like he's got to, you know, take both of what they're saying. And, you know, even like the episode, like whenever it's like, say, just Kirk and Spock, I love their chemistry, I love their camaraderie. Or if it's Kirk and McCoy, you know, like a lot of times Kirk will go to McCoy, you know, for advice. As, you know, as an older, from an older man's perspective, because he's a little bit older than Kirk. But also, like, there's one episode from the third season. It's called The Tholian Web, where Kirk has disappeared and he's kind of like floating around the Enterprise like a ghost. And they, you know, they think he's died, and Kirk and, or sorry, Spock and McCoy like have to, you know, read his last will and testament. They have to work together, And you know, I just love their, you know, their back and forth, their chemistry, and the fact that at the end of the episode they both lie to Kirk when he says, "Well, you guys, how'd you guys work things out, like after you watched my video that I left for you?" And they're like, "Oh, we forgot to do that. We were too busy with everything else, you know." And that, you know, I just love that back and forth. And in my mind, like, those are the best parts of the movies, like motion picture. I love, you know, the scenes with them together. Wrath of Khan, you know, that scene in Kirk's quarters when they're talking about the Genesis device. Star Trek IV, you know, like, they had a lot of good scenes together. And Star Trek V too, like, you know, despite it not being that good of a movie, I love those scenes between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. You know, when they're camping, when they're, you know, trying to save the Enterprise. Like I said, not a good movie, but it had its moments, and those were probably the best moments when you had the Kirk, Spock, and McCoy together, working together. But I just love those guys. All right, so let's go around the table one more time, Kevin.
Okay.
And I mean, if you have any honorable mentions, you can throw them out there as well during this time. So, Kevin, go ahead.
All right. Well, I have an odd one to close up here.
Okay.
Because this is a theory that I've seen online recently, and the first time I saw it, I was like, these two aren't friends. But the more people like break it down and look into it and overanalyze, because that's what we do as, you know, pop culture bloggers and podcasters, I'm like, you might be onto something here. So I'm gonna throw it out there to test the waters for the listeners and all too. And that's Tom and Jerry. Because the new theory is that Tom and Jerry are actually best friends. And Tom doesn't want to kick Jerry out. In most episodes, you know, he's being forced to by, you know, the old woman that you never see her face or anything. And, you know, she'll lecture Tom, if you don't get that mouse, you're outside. We're getting rid of you. So he doesn't want to bother Jerry at all. He's cool with it. It's his friend. They got a nice living situation going on, but he has to pretend to do it so that they can continue to be living there. So all of this is like a giant routine, a giant act, a giant joke play, you know, bust each other's neutered areas and all, to just live in the house together. And I'm like, the first time I saw it, I said, well, that's stupid. You're missing the whole point. And then I got thinking, I'm like, there's enough episodes where random things happen, and that actually makes a lot of sense. And I could see it. I was like, you know, I'm gonna just go with it now.
That's funny. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I'm just gonna add on to that. Oh, sorry, I just lost the word. Okay. It's funny you brought up Tom and Jerry. One friendship that I always admired, and let's see if you remember this. And that's Ralph Wolf and Sam Sheepdog.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. It's such, no, I want to say underrated. Like, if you're going to rank your general public knowledge of Looney Tunes characters, they're so far down. So far down. I love them. Those were great ones.
Yeah, I love them. And it's funny, I always thought that was Wile E. Coyote, but apparently it's not.
Yep.
Nope. Ralph Wolf is virtually the same character design. I'm just reading Wikipedia. As another Chuck Jones character, Wile E. Coyote, brown fur, wiry body, and huge ears, but with a red nose in place of Coyote's black one, usually.
Is that all it is? I could see that.
But I just love how a lot of those begin, you know, where they're, you know, it's like they're showing up for work. You know, and they're punching
Yep.
their time card, they're carrying their lunch kits. And so Sam Sheepdog's job is to protect the sheep, and Ralph Wolf is to try and eat the sheep. but they have a friendship, you know, like when they punch that time card, you know, oh, hi, Ralph. Oh, hey, Sam, you know, like it's, I love it. You know, those are some of my favorite Looney Tunes cartoons for sure. But, you know, when you mentioned Tom and Jerry, that made me think of those two.
Yeah, geez, I think it's going to be a YouTube thing. Now I want to look for some of them. I'm sure it's not on any, if it's on the streaming, it's probably one I'm not paying for currently.
Yeah. But yeah, so that is those guys. So I got a couple honorable mentions I want to throw out there. And one was on my list, like when I came up with this topic, and that's Superman and Jimmy Olsen.
Oh, that's perfect.
I love Jimmy Olsen, you know, especially this recent miniseries that DC did, you know, with Matt Fraction writing. It was so good. It was so good. And Superman was really not in it very much, but when he was, you know, like they're best friends. You know, Jimmy has that watch, you know, all he has to do is hit a button on it and Superman will come to his rescue. But the whole point of that miniseries was he did not want to have Superman save him. So he didn't actually utilize it. But yeah, great friendship. And then last but not least, you know, thank you for being a friend. You know, I took this theme song from them. The Golden Girls, you know, I love their friendship. You know, like I said, watching that show was an inspiration for this episode topic, because they really are best of friends. And I know there's this one episode we watched, and it was a cheesy episode, of course, but, you know, it's one of those episodes when you're, you know, yelling at the TV, where Rose has a near-death experience, so she's, you know, staying out all night, she's going to party, she's doing all this kind of stuff, and it's annoying Blanche and Dorothy and Sophia. So Rose decides to move out, and she moves to this different condo with these other ladies, and none of them are friends, and she's trying to make friends with them, but they're not interested in being her friend. And Blanche and Dorothy go and visit her, and they want to tell her to come back, but they don't, because they think she's happy, and the whole time you're yelling at the TV. Well, when I say yelling at the TV, I'm just thinking of it in my head. I'm not actually yelling. It's like, right. Move back. You know, those are your friends. And of course, the episode ends with her just showing up at the house and, you know, casually saying, yeah, I'm back. And that was it. But I love that camaraderie between them. They're just a great group. Great group of gals, and yeah, I love that show. But anyway, I think we can move on to our next segment, which is our brain candy segment. So this is the segment where we discuss something that we're reading, watching, listening to, whatever, you know, basically candy for our brain. So, Kevin, we'll kick it off with you. What do you got this week for brain candy?
Oh, I've been going through a lot. Taking stuff out at work at the library and then having my boss hand me the printout that my books are late will help me to actually sit down and read them or watch the DVDs of FBAR or whatever.
Yeah.
I finally watched The Meg, the giant shark movie.
Oh, okay.
I love the Steve Alton book that came out many years ago, and I've been waiting for, geez, probably 10 years, if not more, for a movie for it. And there was all sorts of starts and stops.
Mm-hmm.
Overall disappointed, because I actually really like the book. But if I take it as its own thing, I'm like, all right, that was a fun, dumb monster movie. You know, it was all right.
Yep.
I have been going through a ton of graphic novels lately. Farmhand is really good. It's about a farmer that discovers the secret to grow replacement body parts.
Hmm.
And random things that happen from there. Manifest Destiny is a like supernatural cryptozoological retelling of the Lewis and Clark Expedition of the Americas. So that's crazy. And then have you seen No One Left to Fight yet?
No, I haven't. No.
So, all right. No One Left to Fight. There's only 5 issues out. It's collected into a graphic novel. I believe it's from Dark Horse. I'm almost positive. Okay. But it is sort of a, if you take the icons of like Goku and Vegeta and your Dragon Ball Z crew.
Okay.
And go forward. They're all older. They retired. They defeated the big, I mean, Goku's like, hey, I'm going to hang it up. I want to do a trip to where I had my greatest battle. Do you guys want to come with me for the trip? And along the way, we'll touch base with everyone that mattered to us along the way in our story. So mm-hmm. It's kind of like there's your icons and all, you know, these are fresh characters, of course, but to tell it, but like the stand in for Vegeta is still very jealous. I should have been the hero. I should have been the icon. And I'm still training because one day I want to defeat him. He's married to, you know, a Bulma stand-in. And she's like, I don't care about him. I love you. It doesn't matter what our history is. I love you and all. He can't stand it. There's villains that randomly show up and come back. The whole world has, like, a love and respect for him. There's a big secret hiding in there. And it's just drawn amazing. The color's unreal for it and all. And it's when there's no one left to fight, there's only one battle that remains. And are you strong enough to beat that last battle that we all face? It was so good. And there's no deal to continue it right now. I actually had the writer message me on Twitter. He's like, yeah, keep talking about it. Maybe they'll give us the go ahead for more. I'm like, how is there not more of this? So good. Oh, and one last one. Read Firepower from it's Robert Kirkman's new comic.
Firepower.
It's Robert Kirkman's new martial arts comic.
Okay.
You know, guy discovering a secret temple and the special power that he hopes to train himself in that temple and the world that opens up from there. And at first I'm like, oh, it's a martial arts comic, whatever, but it's Robert Kirkman. I'll give it a try. The prelude is a full graphic novel to just get us to issue one. I was like, oh, I'm in. This is incredible.
And that, I'm assuming that's from Image Comics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Skybound through Image. Yep.
And the one you were just talking about, what was that one called again?
No One Left to Fight.
Okay. I'm writing this down because I'm going to check it out.
Oh. They were ones where when I was done, I was mad that there wasn't more.
Yeah,
like, I wasn't satisfied. I finished a book. I was mad there wasn't more.
That's always a good thing. That's always a good thing. There's nothing worse than finishing something and be like, ugh, that was a waste of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, wanting more, that's the highest praise you can give a writer, for sure. All right, so for my brain candy, I got a few things I'll throw out here. I'm just finished issue 3 of The Maestro, which is, as I mentioned, it's a, I guess, a prequel to Future Imperfect, where we learn what happened to the Hulk and why he became evil, why he became the Maestro. And this is written by Peter David with Dale Keown, who was one of the artists. He wasn't the one that did the art for Future Imperfect. That was George Perez. But Dale Keown was the artist on the title at that time. He's doing covers for this. But the art, and I can't remember who the artist is inside, but he's awesome. He absolute beautiful art. And so far, so good. 3 issues in. I think it's a 5 or 6 issue miniseries. But yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's fantastic. I just rewatched Chernobyl, the HBO miniseries that came out last year. Because it always seems like this is like the third time I've watched Chernobyl. It's like I always get something new out of it. Because I, you know, nuclear power, that sort of thing, that kind of interests me. You know, I'm very interested in that. And I was watching a lot of videos explaining about Chernobyl and so on and so forth. So I was like, you know, why not? I'm gonna rewatch that show. And it's only 5 episodes, so it's only 5 hours. Great acting. And like I said, every time I've watched it, I've always got something new out of it. So I rewatched Chernobyl recently, and I just finished season 2 of The Boys on Amazon Prime. Again, fantastic season. This is one of my favorite shows on television right now. Like, they're doing amazing things. I just wish that the seasons were longer. Like, 8 episodes goes by so fast. Even like this season, they released the first 3 episodes at once, and then the episodes after that were once a week. So it was like 5 weeks of episodes, I guess, and then boom, it's done. But yeah, what a great finale. Like, they did such a great job. And then last but not least, my favorite game show of all time is The Price is Right. I love The Price is Right. I'm such a fan. I remember watching it as a kid, Bob Barker, now Drew Carey. It's one of those shows that, like, if I'm home during the day or whatever, you know, I'll put it on, right? And I'll, you know, catch it from time to time. I love Drew Carey. I was a fan of Drew Carey before he replaced Bob Barker. But that being said, like, you know, as with a lot of, you know, live TV shows and so on and so forth, it has become a victim of COVID-19. They have not filmed any episodes. And with California, you know, being as bad as it is right now with the COVID-19, I don't think they're going to be filming Price is Right anytime soon. So what CBS has been doing is they've been showing reruns of The Price is Right from, like, the last, I want to say, 7 or 8 years. So, like, it's a lot, you know, like, it could be episodes I've already seen. But most of them are ones I haven't seen before. And you know, they did a lot of really cool stuff on these shows. So, like, they'll have, like, a theme week you know, the biggest payouts or whatever, or so, you know, so on and so forth. Just the other day, they had an episode. It was an April Fool's Day episode that they did, I want to say 2014. And they actually had Bob Barker host it, like, the first, like, you know, game or whatever. Like, he'd come out, like, they entered, you know, and here's Drew Carey. And then Bob Barker comes out. And then he just rolls right into it, like nothing's changed, right? Like, he owns the stage. And man, I was giddy like a little kid. I was like, oh my God, that's Bob Barker. You know, oh my God, you know, like, this is an episode they made like 6 years ago. But yeah, it was fantastic. So with the COVID-19, yeah, like I said, they're not filming new episodes, but they are showcasing, you know, really good episodes that they have filmed in the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. So, yeah, I've been enjoying The Price is Right. All right, so let's move on to the last segment of our podcast, and that is our Enders segment. And this is the segment where we discuss current events, news items, and that sort of thing. So, Kevin, why don't you kick it off? Well, what do you have for Enders this evening?
Okay, so I end up becoming fascinated with the business side of some of the things that I love. So comics and wrestling, I get very into, mm-hmm. Which is probably why I'm all for Bleeding Cool, even though many people do not like it. But so when DC left Diamond, mm-hmm. earlier this year, they started 2 new distributors. Well, they partnered with, started whatever. One was on the West Coast, one was on the East Coast. They announced this week they're no longer going to go through that East Coast distributor. They're all going through one distributor now. Coincidentally, the East Coast one was owned by, operated by, whatever, Midtown Comics. Mm-hmm. So Midtown Comics apparently takes care of a lot of distribution for Marvel because, you know, they're all in New York, and the rumor is becoming that maybe Marvel didn't want their Midtown also taking care of DC's exclusive stuff. So that's all starting to change. And it seems like, okay, so in the middle of a pandemic, when everyone's scrambling to just keep it normal, you leave Diamond, and then months later, you close one of your distributors. And we're not even talking within a year.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking within months. Those are two massive changes that should have, like, some time in between to get stuff working, which probably means it's not working. So I still say DC's back with Diamond next year. Like, I don't see this working.
But yeah.
There's still... Say, and there's still the rumors that DC is looking into more graphic novels and more bookstores and things like that. Marvel announced, because the DC Universe app is just going to be folded into HBO Max. But DC said their former TV show app that they had Titans and Doom Patrol and all that on is going to have their comics on there. So if you want to keep the app for a lower price, we'll put all of our comics on there to read. Marvel announced that Marvel Unlimited is going to be, instead of 6 months later, 3 months after the single issues are published, they will be available in Marvel Unlimited.
Hmm.
Just 3 months later.
Yeah.
I'm really starting to think, I'm going to change my thought that print is going away for comic stores. I think if you are a reader of comics, a reader, they're pushing you digitally. You can read these comics digital all day long. Mm-hmm. If you're a collector of them, you're the ones going into the stores. So if you want it immediately and can't wait to read it on one of the unlimited apps, or can't wait for the trade, or if you want the variant cover, or if you want to speculate, or if you want a nice collection in your long boxes all bagged and boarded, you're the consumer they want in the store.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just want to sit down and read it, we have these other ways for you. We don't need to drag you into the store. We want your money,
yep.
But we don't need to drag you in. And I really think, because saying I'm into comics or I'm into books, there's a big difference between I have these and I've actually read them, watched them, enjoyed them, whatever. And I have these and they just sit on a shelf all pretty and I've never actually looked at them.
Mm-hmm.
And I do both.
Yep.
I will admit it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that split's going to get bigger and bigger as these changes keep happening.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. Like I know for myself, like I'm totally digital now. Like once in a blue moon, like if I'm at a comic convention or something, you know, I might buy a graphic novel. But you know, like it's very rare that I do. Just because my house is only so big, you know, like I have only so much room to put things. You know, that's the beauty of digital. Well,
and that's my right. And like we're running out of space. We're mm-hmm. we're talking constantly on, you know, we need to start looking for a house and what do we want in a house. And
yep.
I'm like, there has to be at least one more bedroom than what we have now. It's just going to be all my crap in there.
Yep.
And then it's out of the way and it's. You know, the rest of the house can look like an adult lives here, and then all my silliness will be in a separate room.
Yep.
But for me, the nice bookshelves and everything on it, of whether it's comics or DVDs or graphic novels or you know, regular books or whatever,
mm-hmm.
in a way, that's my way of decorating.
Yep.
You know, like, this is how I decorate is stuff. So then when someone comes over, they're like, oh my gosh, you have that? Oh, that's so cool. Oh, look at this. Like, it's my way of showing off something that I have,
mm-hmm.
which means I need more of it to show off, too. And
yep.
my wife gets so frustrated. She's like, you haven't even... Have you watched the last 5 DVDs you bought? Nope, haven't watched any of them, but I had one and bought 5 more today.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, I know. I know the struggle. I know the struggle. Yeah, like, DVDs, like, I'm trying to buy less. I'm trying to go digital with my viewing as well, right? Because, I mean, like, for myself, like, I got, like, Amazon Prime. I got Disney Plus. I got Netflix. And up in Canada, we have something called Crave TV, which is basically our version of Hulu, right? Hulu and HBO Max combined, I guess. I pay for all of those. But even those, there's certain shows that aren't available, you know, like today, for example, like I bought the complete Jetsons, like the original series of the Jetsons. It was on sale for like $27. I was like, you know, I got to get this.
That's nothing.
I'd be foolish not to get it, right? And then same with the original Twilight Zone. I bought that today. It was like $50. And it's all five seasons of the original 60s Twilight Zone, which is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. And currently, it's not available on any of those streaming services that I listed in Canada. It used to be on Crave, I think. And then, I don't know, they lost it. Because I think, because CBS All Access is coming to Canada, or is in Canada, so I think it might be on that one. But I refuse to pay for CBS All Access, right? because there's just nothing on it I want. Because, I don't watch any of the new Star Treks anymore. But if I did want to watch them, they're on the Crave app. So I don't need CBS All Access to watch them, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, to just for a timely example of the importance of having a copy of something still, this is the first time in near 60 years that the Charlie Brown Halloween will not be airing on network TV.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, I never read the story, but why? What is the reasoning behind it?
Apple, because Apple wants to have their own streaming service.
Which yep.
When we upgraded our phones, we got for free for a year. Now they mm-hmm. extended it to February, and I'm like, I haven't watched a second. There's nothing on here that interests me. But one of the properties that they bought up the rights to was the Peanuts catalog.
Yeah.
So they have all of it on there, and they're not going to strike a deal with any network in U.S., Canada, anywhere on this. It's just, this is ours. We're keeping it. If you want to watch it, you need ours. Now, they back down and they're like, okay, you can watch it for free. But you know what? Mom and grandma are not randomly going out, getting a smart TV, downloading the Apple Plus app just to mm-hmm. sit down and watch it. But when it airs on CBS, sometime during Halloween week, they're like, oh, I will watch that tonight. It'll come yep. on after Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, and I will watch that.
Yep.
They're not going to do all the other stuff, though. And now it ruins it. Now it's gone. I mean, thankfully, we have it. Like, a few years ago, I'm like, I don't know why, but I found a set. It's got mm-hmm. three big ones on there. I would like to have that. And my concern was just like, well, we cut cable years ago, so what if I don't get a chance to watch it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if we're not somewhere when it's on, or I'm not able to download it, or whatever it might be? I'm like, I just want to have a copy of it. I want to share it with my kid. You know, yep. like that's the way I was thinking.
Yep.
So now I'm just glad I got it.
Yep. No, I did realize that with the Apple Plus, because I should point out that's another streaming service that I pay for. It's only $6 a month, but the reason why I got it back in the day, because they have what's it called? For All Mankind, where it's like an alternate history where what if Russia landed on the moon first? So it's like an alternate. Yep. You know, 1960s NASA and all that sort of stuff. I really enjoyed that series. It's produced by Ronald Moore, who was one of the writers on Next Generation. He wrote Star Trek Generations and co-wrote Star Trek Generations, Star Trek First Contact. He was the showrunner on the new Battlestar Galactica that the Sci-Fi Channel did. So I really like this guy. And I really like that show. And then Chris Evans had a series called Defending Jacob, which was really good. I really liked it. I love Chris Evans. But honestly, since I watched Defending Jacob, I haven't actually watched anything. But like now that you mentioned with the Peanuts stuff on there, yeah, I forgot that that's there. Plus, they have the new Amazing Stories, which, again, is one of those things I've been meaning to check out. But there's so much to watch. And so little time, and it's crazy.
Yeah, also true, yeah.
Yeah, and it's crazy because I find like myself lately I've been reading more, and I have all these different things to watch, which yeah. Anyway, so for enders for me, I got a couple things. I just wanted to throw it out there that Star Trek Discovery season 3 has begun, and I have not watched 1 minute of it. because I'm so done with that show. I should call it Star Trek Andromeda, because basically they're ripping off Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, like that series, that show that was on in the early 2000s with Kevin Sorbo, and you know, yep. based on concepts by Gene Roddenberry. It was an idea he did pitch in the 70s, and essentially that's what they're doing with Discovery. You know, Discovery travels through time 1,000 years. They need to rebuild the Federation. The Federation's crumbled. You know, they're one ship. You know, all alone. You know, they're gonna have to, you know, do all this all. And I'm thinking to myself, that's Andromeda. Like, that's what they did like 20 years ago with Kevin Sorbo. You know, instead of the Federation, it was the Commonwealth. Instead of the Discovery, it was the Andromeda. Like, these guys suck. Like, no original ideas at all. And I mean, to each their own. Like me, I'm staying away from the Facebook groups, you know, that discuss Star Trek, because I just don't understand why people don't see it for what it is. Because the fan base really is divided. Like, there's people like me that refuse to watch it, that think it's crap, and then there's people that somehow still love it and praise it. And it's like, guys, you know, if you want good Star Trek, watch Deep Space Nine. Like, that, like, that's good Star Trek. This is not good Star Trek. Like, you know, I posted, I think it was on the group, but maybe it was just my personal Facebook page. You know, all the, like, the things that don't make sense with the Kurtzman Star Trek. You know, I had someone comment, you know, it's because of bad, you know, it's bad writing. That's the explanation. And it's like, yeah, it is. It's all bad writing. It's terrible. And it's too bad. Like, it's got potential. Like, I really like, what's his name as Saru. I love Tilly. And even Michael Burnham, you know, even though she's written as, you know, the smartest woman on the planet, in the universe, you know, she can mutiny and get her captain killed, but at the end of the day, she's still a hero. Sonequa Martin-Green, you know, I don't mind her as an actress. I really don't. I just think the writing is just atrocious. Even the special effects are good. You know, like, it looks good. Not big fan of the lens flares. Like, they're definitely taking from, you know, the J.J. Abrams school of filmmaking. But, you know, it's just a shame to see what's happened. And as far as Star Trek Picard, you know, I don't even consider that the continuation of TNG. I think Discovery and Picard take place in an alternate universe. That's what I'm telling myself, because that's how I feel. I feel like I'm, you know, like, Picard would never do the things he did. You know, he would never swear. You know, like, he would never, you know, submit. He would never be like a weak old man. Like, he would never have to hire some random dude to take him places. Like the Klingons would send a ship for Picard, for Christ's sakes. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, like, anyway, that's all I'm saying. I'm going to move on. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, like you were saying, there's so much good stuff out there now. There's so much good content. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to wonder if people want, kind of like what happened when Image exploded and all. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if people would rather not write for a franchise, but write for or create their own properties that they own and can make more money off of, mm-hmm. than writing an episode of a franchise that a studio owns.
Yeah.
So they're not getting the top talent that they would have beforehand, because that top talent is striking their own deals.
Yeah.
For their own original content.
Yes, that's probably it. But the thing is, though, is that I know there are people out there that would be willing to work on the show if they were given a chance. Like, for example, like the Star Trek Continues people, like, for, you know, like, that's a series that I would recommend. It's on YouTube. It's a continuation of the original series. You know, with, of course, different actors, but I mean, they do get some good guest stars on that. Like John DeLancey was on an episode. Jamie Bambar, who played Apollo on the new Battlestar Galactica, he was on an episode. You know, Marina Sirtis is the voice of the computer. You know, they recreated the sets of the original Enterprise. Like, that was well written and well thought out, well produced for what they had. You know, like, I mean, it was all fan funded. They never made a dime off it. Like, why doesn't CBS hire those guys and be like, you guys have the heart. You know, obviously, you love the show. You're familiar with it. You know what works. You know what resonates with fans. You know, as much as I don't like the guy behind Axanar, he's another example of someone that they could maybe consult, because, you know, like that prelude to Axanar fan film, the 15-minute one, that was good. You know, when it showed like the Klingon Federation War, like they really did a good job on that. And again, they got a number of good actors on that show. You know, like there's so much, you know, not to mention all the Star Trek novelists out there that, you know, that they could consult and talk with. You know, for the continuity aspect, I mean, Michael and Denise Okuda wrote the Star Trek Encyclopedia. They wrote a book called the Star Trek Chronology. They know the history. Like they could have been consulted, right? Like, I don't know. It's people that don't care that are in charge. And unfortunately, you know, I don't know what it is. Like Star Trek, like I have friends that are Star Trek fans that love it. That, you know, and we just can't talk about it because, you know, every time they praise it, it just, you know, gets me riled up. It's like, dude, seriously, like, what are you talking about? Like, you can't possibly be serious what you're talking about right now. But as long as there's enough of those people out there, like, they're going to keep putting out a mediocre product because they can, because people will buy it, right? People need to, like, say no more. Like, do better or do nothing. And that's where I'm at right now as a Star Trek fan. Which I never thought I would hear myself say. But it is what it is. So, last but not least, I wanted to bring up X of Swords, or Ten of Swords. It's this new crossover that they're doing with the X-Men books. Have you read any of it, Kevin, or...?
No, there's a podcast that I was listening to. The guy's going through all of the House of X, Powers of X in order.
Yeah.
Oh, like rereading them and going through. And I listened to maybe 20 episodes. He's near 50 now. I'm like, I don't care. I just don't care. I've listened to all this, and the episodes are like 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Like, he's going in detail for it. So I'm getting the full story. He's breaking down. I'm probably understanding more than if I read it myself. And I'm like, I do not care about this story.
Nope.
I just don't. I'm out.
Yep.
So then I saw the swords. I was going through previews for October, and I saw all the sword stuff. I'm like, I can't. There's other stuff. There's other comics my money would be better for right now than this.
Yeah. And that's where I'm at. I hate big events. Typically, I mean, there's a few good ones, but I don't know, like with the X-Men stuff, like since they did the Powers of X, House of X. You know, I've been, honestly, I haven't been reading the Hickman stuff at all. I've been reading, there's a writer, named Benjamin Percy. He writes X-Force, and he also writes Wolverine. And I've been enjoying those because I think he's a very talented writer, and the art has been amazing on those titles. But now they're in this crossover, this 22-part crossover, going through all the X titles. And so anyway, I figured, okay, well, and I've been reading New Mutants. I can't remember who writes that. Once in a while, Hickman will write an issue of New Mutants, but I can't remember the regular writer. It's been okay. So anyway, I bought, you know, the new issue of New Mutants, the new issue of X-Force, new issue of Wolverine, and I don't know what the hell's going on. Like, it, like, I'm so confused, and I realize I've missed a few parts, but I mean, even during a crossover, you know, you should still be able to follow the main story. You know what I mean? Like, it's like back in the day when they would, you know, like, even just not that long ago, like, for example, Fear Itself. You know, I didn't follow all the, you know, crossovers for Fear Itself, but I, you know, would read, you know, I was reading Avengers, and I could still read Avengers and understand the story as it ties into Fear Itself. This, I have no idea what's going on. Not a clue, and I don't care. I mean, it looks pretty. Like I said, like, the artist for X-Force and Wolverine, those artists are amazing. Like, they do such a good job. And I mean, they're pretty to look at, but man, the story just sucked. And I mean, I love, like I said, Benjamin Percy's a great writer, but he's being forced to write as part of this overall story, right? And it just sucks, you know? I went on to one of my Facebook groups because I figured everyone else would be not liking this, and maybe I'm missing something. But everyone, I don't know, I see a lot of praise for it, and I don't get it. I'm like, this is terrible. Like, so anyway, I don't know if you're supposed to call it Ten of Swords or X of Swords. I don't know. But it's a meh for me. And unfortunately, I think for the next couple months, you know, like Wolverine and X-Force and New Mutants is going to be crossing over with this again. So I'm just going to skip them. I'm not buying those issues coming up, because I literally skimmed through those. And I mean, I'm paying like $4 a piece. So right there, that's, you know, over $12. Plus the exchange rate between U.S. and Canada. Like, I probably paid, you know, almost $17 for those three issues that I basically just skimmed through, and I'm like, this sucks. Like, you know, that huge waste of money, waste of time, and yeah, I'm not happy with it.
Well, and to go back, especially when you know it's going to be in a graphic novel collection, probably one that'll be remaindered fairly quickly overall, and you can get cheap, and you know you're going to find these in back issue bins mm-hmm. at a cheaper price than cover.
Yep.
So why spend the money on it now? And like X-Men, the more and more stuff like this happens and all the spin-off books and all, X-Men is the United States' long-running manga at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was flipping through, because I really wanted to watch a manga. I'm like, I want to watch one from beginning to end, like a good short one, a one season one. Hulu has One Piece, and there's like almost 1,000 episodes of One Piece overall. Pokemon's like near like 1,000, maybe 2,000, I don't know, something crazy.
Yep.
Like some of these long-running ones, I was like, how would you even get into it? Well, they're smart. They have, you know, seasons, and, you know, there's something like the soft reboots and stuff like that. But that's got to be what X-Men is, really. It's our version of it. Like when you go into a bookstore or a comic store or whatever and see those rows and rows of a manga, mm-hmm. and all the way up to, you know, oh, here's volume 70 of Naruto. I'm not spending $700 to get all 70 at $10 a pop here to read Naruto. Yep. Some people are and love it.
Yep.
Much like X-Men. I'm not spending all this money to read this. Well, okay, you don't have to. Someone else is gonna.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like with like what I was just talking about with Star Trek Discovery, you know, if I want to watch good Star Trek, I'll go watch Next Generation. I'll watch Deep Space Nine. Like, that's still there. And it's like with X-Men. A few years ago, they had a sale on Comixology for Chris Claremont X-Men, like all his collections, like masterpieces, Marvel masterpieces. And I bought them because I think they were only like $3 a pop or something. And I ended up buying the whole set. So like, I'm just going to go back and read some Claremont X-Men because, you know, that's my go-to. Like, that's my favorite, favorite take of the X-Men.
Yeah, and it's still there, and that's the dragon everyone's been chasing ever since.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. But, all right. Well, I think, Kevin, we could call this an episode. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And, Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
Okay, you can find me across the internet. All the major social medias is at Masked Library. My home blog is maskedlibrary.com. And I also do random columns and podcasts over at the Retro Network.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, you can follow me on Facebook, on Twitter, and Instagram at ChrisLock1701. I have a blog. It's called randomnerdist.blogspot.com. Well, it's called Random Nerdist, but it is available at randomnerdist.blogspot.com. I haven't been blogging in a while. I don't think I've done one blog post this month, to be honest with you. I don't know. Just been busy with between work and everything else. Just haven't been blogging. So, but I mean, I got a lot of content there. So if you want to go check it out, randomnerdness.blogspot.com. Aside from these episodes, like our regular episodes, we also do the Deep Space Nine discussion episodes. So we just did one recently where we discussed the first 6 episodes of season 6. The reason being, we had some technical difficulties with Skype that night, so we only got 6 episodes in, and then we decided to call it quits. And then I had to do a lot of editing, because there was a lot of editing to be had. So, yeah, we are still doing those episodes, the Deep Space Nine discussion episodes, so be sure to check that out. That is available on this feed. All right, so on behalf of Kevin Decent and myself, Chris Lockhart, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was our Thank You for Being a Friend episode, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.
I know.